Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada ki. ISKCON founder Charya, Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveda Bhaktivinda ki jai. Gaura Premananda. All glories to the symbol devotees. All glories to the symbol devotees. All glories to the symbol devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Sai Bhagavai, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami, Pranami, Namaste Saraswati Devi. Gaura Vandi Pacharni, Nirvishesha Shunya Vadi Pashti Pradesitar. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, The Prayers of Queen Kunti. We're doing texts 48 through 50 today. So we'll do 48 responsibly. No. Yeah. Thank you, though. Aho me pashyatajnanam.
Aho me pashyatajnanam.
Pridirudham daratmana.
Pridirudham daratmana.
Parakshyaiva dehasya.
Parakshyaiva dehasya.
Bhavo me shohi nirhata.
Bhavo me
aho me pashyata jnanam.
Aho me pashyata jnanam.
Ridhi rudham daratmana.
Ridhi rudham daratmana.
Parakshya shyaiva dehasya.
Parakshya shyaiva dehasya.
Bhavo me shonahir shohi. Bhavyo me shohi nirhata.
Bhavyo me shohi nirhata.
Aho me pashyata jnanam.
Aho me pashyata jnanam.
Ridhi rudham daratmana.
Ridhi rudham daratmana.
Parakshya shyaiva dehasya.
Parakshya shyaiva dehasya.
Bhavyo me shohi nirhata.
Bhavyo me shohi nirhata.
Others? Vaishnavis. Aho.
Aho.
Oh.
Aho.
May my Pashita just see Agyanam ignorance Gritty in the heart Rudham situated in Dharatmana of the sinful Parakshasha meant for others Eva certainly Dehasha of the body Bhavya many May by me Akshonahi combination of military phalanxes Kata killed. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. King Yudhishthir said, O my lord, I am the most sinful man. Just see my heart, which is full of ignorance. This body, which is ultimately meant for others, has killed many, many phalanxes of men. Purport. A solid phalanx of 21,870 chariots, 21,870 elephants, 109,650 infantry, and 65,600 cavalry is called an Akshuhini. And many Akshuhinis were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Maharaj Yudhisthira, the most pious king of the world, takes for himself responsibility for killing such a huge number of living beings because the battle was fought to reinstate him on the throne. This body is, after all, meant for others. While there is life in the body, it is meant for the service of others. And when it is dead, it is meant to be eaten by dogs and jackals or maggots. He is sorry because for such a temporary body, such a large massacre was committed. Text 49. I'll just read through. Baladvija suhinmritya pitre bartri guru duha name shanirayan moksho yapi varsha yuta yutai. I have killed many boys, Brahmins, well-wishers, friends, parents, preceptors, and brothers. Though I live millions of years, I will not be relieved from the hell that awaits me for the sin. Report. Whenever there is a war, there is certainly a massacre of many innocent living beings, such as boys, Brahmins, and women, whose killing is considered to be the greatest of sins. They are all innocent creatures, and in all circumstances, killing them is forbidden in the scriptures. Maharaj Yudhisthira was aware of these mass killings. Similarly, there were friends, parents, and preceptors on both sides, and all of them were killed. It was simply horrible for him to think of such killing, and therefore he was thinking of residing in hell for millions and billions of years. Text 50. Naino Ragya Praja Bhartur Dharma Yudhe Vadhod Vasham Iti Mena Tubodharya Kalpate Shashanam Vacha. There is no sin for a king who kills for the right cause, who is engaged in maintaining his citizens. But this injunction is not applicable to me. Report. Maharaj Yudhisthira thought that although he was not actually involved in the administration of the kingdom, which was being carried on well by Duryodhana without harm to the citizens, he caused the killing of so many living beings only for his personal gain of the kingdom from the hands of Duryodhana. The killing was committed not in the course of administration, but for the sake of self-aggrandizement, and as such, he thought himself responsible for all the sins. Om Jnana Timurandisha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksulamitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchako Paturvishcha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitano Pavane Bio Vaishnavego Namo Namaha. So in the first purport, Srila Prabhupada says, Yudhisthira was the most pious king in the world. So why would he feel, and is now stating, that he was the most sinful? Well, of course, it's explained in these verses. He feels that millions of people died on his account just so that he would be the emperor. And they were not just soldiers, Kshatriyas fighting. It was also innocent people that were killed, which is a natural thing that happens in most wars. And he also reasoned that Duryodhana was not an evil ruler. other than his treatment of the Pandavas, which was quite evil. But as far as the citizens, he wasn't persecuting them. He wasn't like King Vena, who stopped sacrifice and didn't allow a Brahminical culture. He pretty much followed Brahminical culture, although he was not a particularly good person. So why was it necessary for this huge massacre, for all of this suffering on account of Yudhishthira being enthroned? Although, of course, Yudhishthira was the rightful king. But Yudhishthira feels since all of this suffering was caused only for his benefit, then he was the most sinful of people. Now, of course, Yudhishthira is not actually sinful. He has unlimited good qualities. And in fact, the very fact that he is saying how sinful he is shows some of his good qualities of compassion, of mercy, of feeling sorrowful that so many people have suffered. These are actually his good qualities, not his sinful qualities. Now, so I want to talk a little bit today about why he's feeling this way and what are his actual good character and good qualities. And to get a little bit of understanding about why Yudhishthira is lamenting in this way. So Yudhishthira, as we know, is known as Dharmaraj. Dharmaraj, because his father was Yamaraj. And Yamaraj, of course, not only is he the king of death, but he's also the knower of all religious principles. And he's of course, one of the Mahajans, mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he has, as a father, one who knows all religious principles. And he was also known to be very, very righteous. So Yudhishthira was known for his righteousness and understanding of Dharma, and also for his kindness, humility, compassion, and truthfulness. So he had all of these good qualities. He was an expert in understanding religious principles. Of course, one of the best examples is the well-known story of when he was questioned by the Yaksha. Of course, this was after his brothers were... I think it was a Brahmin lost his staff or something, his rod. And anyway, they went to this, the brothers one by one went to the lake to try to retrieve this for the Brahmin. And they all, because it was a long walk and they were thirsty, they all drank the water and they fell over dead from the poison water. So finally Yudhishthira comes to look for his brothers. He sees all the four brothers laying there dead around the pond. Of course, he's very upset. And a voice comes from the sky. Or that's not from the sky, it's actually from this, first there's a voice, and this Yaksha, who's this great sort of powerful, almost demoniac type of being, whatever, appears to him and says the only way that he can get his brothers back to life is by answering his questions. So Yudhishthira does. And of course they're rather clever questions, somewhat difficult, tricky, and he gives very, very expert answers, showing his wisdom, showing his knowledge of all religious principles. And of course, probably the one most well-known is the Yaksha asks him, what is the most wonderful thing in the world? Now you could think, you have to give the right answer, and there's so many ways you could answer that. What's the most wonderful thing in the world? But he comes up with the best answer. He says, the most amazing thing in this world is that even though one every day sees countless living entities dying, he still acts and thinks as if he will live forever. And it is quite wonderful, and I think most of us fall into that category. No, it's so. At any rate, he satisfied the Yaksha with his example of knowledge of religious principles, and of course it turns out that the Yaksha is actually his father, Yamaraj, and the life is returned to his brothers. So this was just an example, and there are so many examples how he was a speaker in many places in the Bhagavatam. In different discussions, he was part of very, very wonderful discussions on the Siddhanta of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, as a devotee, unlike he is saying here, how he was so sinful and he caused all the death of all these people, it certainly was not for lack of kindness and compassion. It wasn't because Yudhishthira is now saying, look at me, I'm the greatest king there ever was. I killed more people than anyone. Look at all the millions of people that I killed. I'm such a great Kshatriya. No, exactly the opposite. He sees all of this as to his shame, that he was the cause of all of this killing. And kindness, of course, is an important quality for an advanced devotee. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 12th chapter, when talking about the qualities of intelligence, it says, Advaishtasarva Bhutana Maitri Karuna. that the devotee is non-envious towards all living entities and a kind friend. So a devotee is not only kind to his friends, but kind to everyone, which includes his enemies. And of course, a devotee does not see others as enemies, at least an advanced devotee does not, as Prahlada Maharaj. He said to see friends and enemies is, he called that, that's politics, diplomacy. And he wasn't interested in that. That's what his teachers were trying to tell him, all the ways of conniving, seeing friends and enemies, how to work things so that you get the best advantage over others. Prahlada Maharaj says, I'm not interested in this. All this friends and enemies is maya, it's illusion. It's simply materialistic diplomacy. And this is the mood of the devotee. And of course it was the mood of Maharaj Yudhishthira. And in fact, Maharaj Yudhishthira is called, one of his names, and I looked this up this morning, and there's four or five different verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam, at least four or five that I found, that directly call Yudhishthira Ajatashatru. What does Ajatashatru mean? It means one whose enemy was never born. So this isn't a casual thing. This is like one of his names, Arjuna is called Dhananjaya, or there's certain names that Krishna calls them repeatedly, that are there. There's a number of them for Arjuna that are in the Bhagavad Gita. And this one of Ajatashatru is such a quality and characteristic of Yudhishthira that it's mentioned, as I said, four or five times in the Bhagavatam. One whose enemy was never born. Now that's rather remarkable for someone who is fighting one of the greatest battles in history, killing millions and millions of so-called enemies. So the point is that he did not see enemies. Others may have seen him as an enemy, but he did not. And now he is lamenting for killing so many of these. And he's not saying they're all my enemies, but no, he's saying they were friends, they were relatives, they were teachers, they were, innocents. No, he sees all of these people and all of the difficulties there. And so he, again, shows that kindness and compassion. And this is a very natural thing for the devotee, because the devotee is kind to all, humans, animals, everyone. He sees the pure spirit soul. If you see the soul, then you can't really have any hatred for anybody. And, I mean, that's very difficult for us. If we confront a situation where someone is giving us a lot of difficulty or causing us pain, it's very hard for us to say, well, that's just his body, and it's just my false ego or my, mind that's responding to it. But actually, we're all spirit souls, and we're all, servants of Krishna together. It's a hard thing to do. It requires transcendental vision, which we try to develop more and more as devotees. We try to develop that vision. We at least try to think that way, like, well, this would be a good way to think or to see it. And the more that we do that, the more we practice at it, the more we actually will start to see things that way. But anyway, as it said in the Bhagavad Gita 5.18, the humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahman, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. So the devotee is a friend to all. Why? Because Krishna is the friend to all. And we have those minute qualities as Krishna has. Krishna is called in Bhagavad Gita 5.29, the three qualities are mentioned there of Krishna. And one of them is Suhridam Sarvabhutanam, the dearmost friend and well-wishers of all living entities. He's also, of course, the controller of all the worlds and the recipient of all sacrifices. But here, for one of the three, that he says he's the dearmost friend and well-wisher of all living entities. So why? Because Krishna's desire is for us to return to him and not suffer in this material world. Now, it's interesting, this idea of how Krishna is the well-wisher of everyone. This actually involved Maharaj Yudhishthira, a very interesting discussion about that, because Maharaj Yudhishthira, this was after the Rajasuya sacrifice and after the killing of Shishupal. Shishupal merges into the body of Krishna, right? He gets, what liberation is that called? Sayuja? I can't remember. It is Sayuja, okay. The liberation of merging into the body of Krishna. It's not something devotees particularly are looking for, but at any rate, here's someone who is a demon, and he gets liberated. And so Maharaj Yudhishthira asked Narada Muni, how is this? How does even a demon like Shishupal receive liberation? And Narada Muni says to him, Bhagavatam 7.1.31, my dear King Yudhishthira, the gopis by their lusty desires, Kamsa by his fear, Shishupal and other kings by envy, the Yadus by their familial relationship with Krishna, you Pandavas by your great affection to Krishna, and we, the general devotees, Narada Muni is just a general devotee, this is humility, by our devotional service have attained the mercy of Krishna. Somehow or another, one must consider the form of Krishna very seriously. Then, by one of the five different processes mentioned above, one can return home back to Godhead. So, this is Narada Muni saying, by any process that one remembers Krishna, and Shishupal was meditating on Krishna all the time, even though it might have been out of envy or hatred, he was meditating on Krishna constantly. So any contact or meditation on Krishna is beneficial because Krishna is all good, all pure, and any association of the living entity with Krishna is purifying. Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Namedaveshu Stina Kriya Yevajanti Tumam Bhaktya Mayiteshu Chapyaham. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion as a friend is in me, and I am also a friend to him. So this is kind of like a paradox in a sense. Krishna is saying, I am equal to everyone. But if one is a devotee, if one offers service to me and a friend, then I'm also a friend to him. So is that being partial? Not really. It's reciprocation in kind. And Prabhupada explains that in the purport. Prabhupada says, one may question here that if Krishna is equal to everyone and no one is a special friend, then why does he take a special interest in devotees who are always engaged in his transcendental service? This is not discrimination. It is natural. Any man in the material world may be very charitably disposed that he has a special interest in his own children. The Lord claims that every living entity in whatever form is his son, and so he provides everyone with a generous supply of the necessities of life. It's just like the cloud which pours all rain all over, regardless of whether it falls on rock or land or water. But for his devotees, he gives special attention. One of the qualities of Krishna is his reciprocation with all living entities, and particularly with his devotees. He's called Bhaktivatsal. He is one who is particularly fond of his devotees because basically Krishna says, whatever you want, I'll respond that way. If you want to be in this material world and forget me, I'll let you forget me. If you want to remember me, then I will be there. And whatever way that you want to remember me, whatever way that you want to love me, I will be there in that form. If you want to love me in the form of Nrisingadeva or Lord Ramachandra, then you can develop the highest Krishna prema in that way. If you want to worship me as Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead in Goloka Vrindavan, then I will bring you to me. So this is Krishna, all kind, all good to living entities, and always impartial. And so, thus, a great devotee, eternal associate of Krishna, like Maharaj Yudhisthira, has the same qualities of impartiality, of being kind to everyone, caring to everyone, and reciprocates in time, in kind. So, another example of Maharaj Yudhisthira's compassion is an interesting story about Maharaj Yudhisthira and the dog. Now, I found that this is in Mahabharata, and I couldn't find any of Prabhupada's books of the Acharya, so I don't know if it is or there, so I can't say it's 100% accurate, But Mahabharata, it's from the Mahabharata that was translated by one of our devotees, and it's in the database, so I assume it's at least 95% accurate. No. That's just my disclaimer, since I didn't really find Prabhupada tell this. Anyway, after the Pandavas renounce, everyone is killed, everyone is gone, they have the fratricidal war, all the relatives are killed, it's only the Pandava brothers left. So they say, that's it, time for us to go back. And so they start a long journey, right? Long journey, where are they headed towards? Bhadrakashram, or up to the Himalayas, or something, anyway. And
To go to heaven.
Yeah, well anyway, that's what their goal was. I don't know how, this big journey to get to heaven, to the heavenly planets. And, they fall away one by one. And finally, Yudhisthira's left. He makes it. And Indra comes to him to take him to heavenly planet. But a dog followed him the whole way. There was a dog walking with him. And he says, all right, we have to take the dog too. And Indra says, we don't have dogs in the heavenly planet. You can't have a dog here. Right? Ross said, there's no dogs in the heavenly planet. Anyway, but Maharaj Yudhisthira said, I'm not going if the dog doesn't go. More or less, that's what he said. This dog has been loyal to me. He's taken shelter of me. Therefore, he doesn't go, I don't go. So then what happens? The dog turns into Yamaraj, again, his father. And he said he was so pleased with him. He said, because you have such a sense of, you know, loyalty and of taking care of all living entities, then you are qualified, you know, like that. And so that's that showed one of his qualities of compassion. This mercy towards all living entities, it's called Dayabhuteshu in Bhagavad Gita, mercy towards all living entities. So Krishna has that quality of compassion, and Krishna exhibits his compassion to his devotees in the same way, in a similar way. But it's hard for us to approach Krishna directly and get Krishna's mercy directly. So because we're not so pure, able to really enter exactly into Krishna's exclusive entourage, we approach Krishna through his devotees. We approach Krishna through the spiritual master. We render service to the spiritual master, and then he offers that service to Krishna. We also, Prabhupada told us how we can offer a service and appeal to the mercy of Radharani, because Radharani is the most merciful personality. Krishna has a great quality of compassion, but that compassion is actually personified and manifested in Srimati Radharani. Srila Prabhupada says in purport Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.23, in the Brahma Samhita, it is said that the Lord is never to be found by becoming a great scholar of the Vedic literatures, but he's very easily approachable through his pure devotee. In Vrindavan, all the pure devotees pray for the mercy of Srimati Radharani, the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna. Srimati Radharani is the tender-hearted feminine counterpart of the Supreme Whole, resembling the perfectional stage of the worldly feminine nature. Therefore, the mercy of Radharani is available very readily to sincere devotees, and once she recommends such a devotee to Lord Krishna, the Lord at once accepts the devotee's admittance into his association. Prabhupada said that several times. He'd say, when if you approach Radharani, you please Radharani, then she says to Krishna, Krishna, there's this very nice devotee doing some nice service. So Radharani becomes our intercessory to be able to approach Krishna. And then one more, Prabhupada said, Radharani is, this was in a lecture on Radhastami. Radharani is Hari Priya, very dear to Krishna. So if we approach Krishna through Radharani, through the mercy of Radharani, then it becomes very easy. If Radharani recommends, this devotee is very nice, then Krishna immediately accepts. Because it is recommended by Radharani, Krishna accepts. So, we approach Prabhupada, we approach Radharani, these great merciful personalities, and they will help us to approach Krishna. Now, of course, again, not only do we approach Radharani to advance in devotional service and please and serve Krishna, but we also have a special privilege. We have the special opportunity that Krishna came in the mood of Radharani, the combined form of Radha and Krishna as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically came. He gave us the easy process of Sankirtan Yajna to become purified. And if we can take shelter of him, Lord Chaitanya Lornichananda. He is considered the most merciful, the Moha Mahabhadanaya Krishna Prema Vidayate. And he's given us this easy process of self-realization, but also the highest, deepest, absolute truth. So we're very fortunate in this way that we can approach these great devotees and great personalities to gain Krishna's grace. Another quality Maharaj Yudhisthira exemplified was truthfulness. And devotees understand and can impart the truth of spiritual knowledge. When we talk about truthfulness, it's not just a matter of, you know, okay, that I tell the truth, I don't tell a lie. You know, like there's this story in America that we all heard as kids, George Washington was famous for never telling a lie. There's a story about a cherry tree, and he chopped down the cherry tree. His father said, "Who did?" And he said, I did it, Father, I can't tell a lie." So this is his great quality, that he stupidly chops down the cherry tree, but he didn't lie about it. And at any rate, that does not exactly make him a saintly personality. I mean, he did a few things, I think, more important than that. But that was a famous story, you know, because it is a great quality of being truthful, and people recognize truthfulness. In fact, it's explained that the four religious qualities are being destroyed one by one, and in Kali Yuga, truthfulness is the only one that's a little bit left, and the bowl of Dharma is tottering even on that one leg of truthfulness. You know, so it is a very important quality, but it also means that one tells the truth about what is important in life, about spiritual life, about the meaning of life, how somebody can help themselves and actually become happy. That's real truthfulness. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita 10.4, "Truth should be spoken in a straightforward way so that others will understand actually what the facts are. If a man is a thief and people are warned that he's a thief, that is truth. Although sometimes the truth is unpalatable, one should not refrain from speaking it. Truthfulness demands that the facts be presented as they are for the benefit of others. That is the definition of truth." Now, I think one of the very important phrases here is Prabhupada says, facts should be presented for the benefit of others. So in other words, unnecessary unkindness is not necessarily the essence of truthfulness. To just insult somebody and mention some bad quality about them for no good reason, that's not going to be helpful to them, that's not truthfulness. That's just being unkind. You know. So that's not what's meant. We want to not just to speak truth, but absolute truth, and deliver a message of Krishna for the benefit of mankind. So whatever our communication is with someone else, and we're saying, "Well, I just told the truth," we have to say, was it for our satisfaction or for their benefit? If it's just so I felt good, then what's the benefit? That's not real truthfulness. Real truthfulness is telling it so that a person will benefit from that. So you might help them, maybe give them deeper realization, better understanding. Okay? One of the best illustrations of our Yudhisthira, of his truthfulness, was the time that he was not truthful. I'll talk about that in a minute. Yudhisthira was famous for his truthfulness and very strict adherence to Dharma. That's why it's another one of those interesting little, you know, quirks or interesting, not quirk, just an interesting pastime, a leela, part of the Mahabharata and part of, you know, the whole story. It's in Srimad Bhagavatam too. Krishna actually asked Yudhisthira to lie. In the battle, things were not going well. It's Dronacharya, right? Dronacharya was fighting, you know, was about to defeat Arjuna and defeat the warriors. And Dronacharya's son was Ashwatthama, as we know. So Krishna tells Yudhisthira, yell out that said, call out that Ashwatthama is dead. And he knew that that would just totally, you know, throw Dronacharya off his game, as they say. He wouldn't be able to, he'd be so heartbroken, his son was killed, he wouldn't be able to continue. And Yudhisthira hesitated, because that's not true. But it turned out that there was an elephant named Ashwatthama who had just been killed. So it's kind of a half-truth. He said, you can just say Ashwatthama is dead because the elephant has actually been killed. So he complied. Why? Not that he did not want to say something that was not true, but it's because it was Krishna's order. And that was the important thing. The highest principle, the highest religious principle, and greatest truthfulness is always to follow the order of Krishna. Because, as it says, you know, Krishna, what is the verse, Dharmaktu Sakshad Bhagavat Prinitam? That the highest truth, the real principles of religion is that which is enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whatever Krishna says, that's truth. That's the highest principle, so we follow that. And if Krishna says, you need to tell a little white lie here, then that's what he does. Now there's another, I think it's Mahabharata again, it's mentioned that on their way to Krishna Loka eventually, or wherever they went, Maharaj Yudhisthira had to see hell, right? So sometimes they said he had to see hell because he told a lie. The Prabhupada actually explained it wasn't because he told a lie, it's because he hesitated to follow Krishna's order, right? In other words, that's the real principle. You know, just because he hesitated to follow Krishna's order, of course he did follow it. And so that's the real principle. So Yudhisthira was not at fault for the killing of Kurukshetra. It was Krishna's will and arrangement, and he was simply being the instrument. You know, it's very similar to what happened in the beginning, before the battle started, when Arjuna hesitated and had some of the same doubts and questions, kind of foreseeing that this was going to happen, this mass killing of certain people. Arjuna said, I don't want to do this. And of course, then Krishna speaks the Bhagavad Gita to him, and, you know, so he understands the same principle, that this was Krishna's desire, Krishna's will, and it's all happening anyway. It was all happening by the hand and the will of the Lord, and that his job was simply to be an instrument and perform his duty, his service as a Kshatriya, as a devotional act to Krishna. In the same way, this is the situation with Yudhisthira. The war, the battle, was not just to put him on the king. Krishna had his own reasons to rid the world of demoniac kings, to, you know, reduce the military power, to glorify the Pandavas. Krishna had his own reasons. So therefore, he was simply acting as an instrument. Now, fortunately for Yudhisthira, as this chapter ends, it's kind of inconclusive. But in the next chapter, in chapter 9, when Bhishma is laying on the battlefield dying, he speaks many, many wonderful things of philosophy, but he also speaks directly to Yudhisthira and informs him, this was not your fault. This all went on by the will of the Lord. So then, of course, he was able to pacify Yudhisthira. So Yudhisthira could really understand from the great devotee, like Bhishma Dev, you know, how he was simply instrumental in Krishna's desires. So for the devotee, his highest purpose is to fulfill the desire of the Lord. And even if sometimes that is difficult or uncomfortable, that is really, really the highest platform. So again, Yudhisthira's feeling so much remorse and that he is sinful is simply a matter of his good qualities of feeling kindness and compassion, you know, but he will understand that he was not at fault and this was all due to Krishna's desire and Krishna's plan and arrangement. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Are there any questions, comments? Anyone?
I have questions.
Okay. Anyone else?
Hare Krishna Prabhupada, thank you for the nice class. You know, when we speak of Maharaj Yudhisthira being a righteous king and fighting a righteous battle, there's many people even in the modern day who will say that, oh, the battle I'm fighting is righteous, and they'll do many things and kill innocent people to do that. So how do we explain to people what's actually righteous and what's not, that though these people may be killing in the name of God or in the name of religion, that what they're actually doing is wrong?
Yeah, and people, it's hard for people to understand that unless they really do have a concept that, first of all, of God, and that God is control, and he has his plan for the world. So the question is, are you actually fulfilling God's plan, or are you using that? Because many, many wars have been conducted in the name of God, and that's what people object to, and they'll get confused. They'll think, oh yeah, well, you know, the Muslims say that when they're blowing up people, what the terrorists say, it's for Allah, it's for God. Although, obviously, real Muslims would disagree. They'd say that's not actually, you know, that's not actually Islamic philosophy. But nevertheless, the Christians, the same thing. Christians carried on all sorts of wars and inquisitions, crusades, many atrocities, and it's probably been done by every religion. So that's a natural question people have. So it takes a little bit of faith to understand that this is a different situation that happened thousands of years ago, and there actually was righteousness. when they actually were devotees of God, and that these kings were Rajarishis. They were saintly kings. They were not just warriors or politicians, but they were great devotees of Krishna, great devotees of the Lord. And as we can see, Arjuna didn't want to do this. Yudhishthira didn't want to do this. He's lamenting afterwards. In other words, it was their motivation was not for power, not to, you know, gain some property or piece of land, or you know, simply consolidate their empire. Their whole motivation was, what did God want? How to please God? And as I said, Krishna had a particular plan here. You know, to rid the world of these demoniac kings, to restore religious principles. As he says, he comes to, you know, every time Krishna comes, he comes to save the pious, you know, to give pleasure to his devotees, to annihilate the miscreants, and to reestablish the principles of religion. So he's fulfilling his purposes, and a devotee just sees himself as an instrument. And if you're a Kshatriya and you happen to be the instrument that needs to fight a war on God's behalf and Krishna's behalf, then so be it.
Thank you.
It still can be difficult to explain to people in the modern, which I understand. Yes, Prabhu?
Thank you for the very nice class, Prabhu. So my question is, what do you need, should do, what you should be doing in case of when you think something is beneficial for somebody, but it's also not, you know, very you know, loving, or, you know, it's my kind of good to hear that. So what you should be doing in that?
Okay, you're saying sometimes someone will do something that they think is beneficial, but it's not in a very loving way?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'll try to do it in a loving way. I'm not quite sure if I understand the question.
Something, you know, you think, you know, something that you need to tell somebody, which is truth, okay. But at the same time, it's not, you know, very good to hear that.
Yeah, you want to say truth in a way that's palatable, and as Prabhupada says, for the benefit of others. Now, sometimes it's hard to do that. Sometimes it can't always be done, you know. But at the same time, it really has to do with motivation. If there's some relationship, if people understand you're working, that you're coming from a point of helping them, or at least in a sort of a neutral frame, but it's not, you know, then people are more willing to hear. I've given a different example of this in my own life. I've had devotees, like, say, working for me in the department, you know, that I can say one or two that I actually had fired. And then we were later best friends. Because, I don't know how that happened, Krishna's mercy, you know, that somehow I was able to do it in such a way that it wasn't like destroying the personal relationship. You know, that it was, you know, in other words, in trying to always maintain that, and people, the idea that you're not trying, you don't want to hurt them or harm them, you wish them well. If you want to, in other words, if the other person sees you as their well-wisher, they're more likely to take bad news or take something that might be, you're saying, well, maybe you should do this in a better way or a different way. And that requires some humility, too. You know. I think if we're humble with people and that they see that we're our well-wisher, then the message is more palatable. You know.
I have a question that there's a past tense in, I guess, Brahma Vaivartapura, where a sage was sitting under a tree, and there is a butcher who was chasing the cow. Mm. And when the cow came near the sage, the road split. And so the sage opened the eyes halfway and saw the cow went by. And then later on, the butcher came and says, hey, did you see which way the cow went? And he did. He was speaking the truth. Didn't want to lie. But then he had to face Jamaraj, end of his life. And he confronted, he said, I didn't do anything wrong in my life. He said, oh no, you actually made this cow get killed because of you. So my question is, the material truth, I mean, there is a connotation.
There's a certain relativity of truth. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, it's interesting. I don't want to digress. It's late, I know. But there's a lot of these studies in what they call moral development. There's a, what was his name? My gosh, it's been years I used to teach this. But, you know, they have these different stages, and I think, and what, when this, in this one, what he did was he posed a dilemma to people. And the dilemma was something about, oh, it was called Heinz and the Drug. I don't know why it was Heinz. Okay. A man's wife is dying. There's only one drug that can cure her. The drug costs $10,000. The guy's fairly poor, doesn't have any money. And he goes to the druggist and he says, can I somehow work this out? Can I pay it back? Can I do it over time? Can I, he didn't have a credit card, I guess. The drug said, nope. Pay or that's it, $10,000. So his wife's gonna die. So he went in and robbed the drugstore, got the drug to save his wife. So the question is, was this moral? Was it not moral? Why? And these are the kind of things. In other words, you know, it's relative. In other words, was it a higher purpose to save a life than not to steal? Which is the same sort of question there. In other words, Yamaraj is saying it's a higher principle not to kill cows or to protect the cow than it was to tell a small lie, which, you know, didn't really hurt the person, it just saved the cow. You know, he didn't kill the butcher, you know, all it would do was save the cow. So it's that kind of thing, you know, these are like moral dilemmas, and so you always have to look at what is the higher purpose. Now, it was interesting when I was studying this, that sometimes they've even, this is even encoded in law to some degree, at least informally or in case law. There was a case in Arizona, boy, I'm going off the rails here. Anyway, there was a case in Arizona where a person was out in the desert, and they were like lost, stranded, dying, and, you know, brought ready, you know, and they came to a house that was closed up, no one was there, and so the guy broke in, you know, to get some food and water to save his life, you know, and then later he was arrested. The guy said, this guy broke in my house. And the court ruled, well, no. I mean, you know, it was like justified. You know, maybe he had to pay for fixing the door or something. But, you know, he said, no, it wasn't criminal breaking. He had to save his life. So in other words, you have to view the greater context of these things. And for us, first of all, it's like, what is the higher spiritual value? What is the highest religious principle involved? And particularly, what is it that Krishna would want? What is Krishna's desire? What is Krishna asking us to do in this situation? We don't always know, of course, but that's an interesting point, because it's not always black and white, you know, because sometimes you have a conflict between two values, right? Two different truths. It's kind of like, you know, if you were in Nazi Germany and someone was a Jewish person or someone was hiding in your basement and they come to your door and say, are there any Jews in your house? I'd probably say, nope, nobody here. You can say, oh, no, yeah, go down in the basement, you can go and take them away and kill them. No. In other words, same idea.
I have another question. Yudhishthira Maharaj disobeyed, in one sense, Krishna's order, and he had to see the hell, as you were narrating the story. Prabhupada actually mentioned that. So.
Yeah.
My point is that we can make it relevant to our present life, like we follow Prabhupada, and now we follow Prabhupada through his representative GVC board. So if the GVC board made the decision that you should not bow down you should not touch the floor because of this COVID-19, it's just a simple example. But at the same time, Prabhupada says, one of the quotes that I like a lot, he says that the purpose of Krishna consciousness movement is to train each individual independently thoughtful and competent in all departments without bureaucracy. So now, this happened actually with some devotee here. So if the devotee is thinking, well, in the Bhagavatam says that if I bow down to the Lord, I don't know when death is coming, at least I will be protected. I will not face the Jamaraj. And that's exactly what sixth canto Bhagavatam says. Says that, well, Prabhupada said, I have to think independently. You know, so what is your...
First of all, I think it's really interesting because that's a very, very often quoted quote from Srila Prabhupada's letter about being independently thoughtful. But interesting, that was a letter to Karandar, I forget what year. And if you read the whole letter, it's quite interesting. And no one ever reads the second half of the letter. In the second half of the letter, Prabhupada talks about how the GBC must go to the temples and make sure that everyone is following and this and that and that and the other thing. No, it's just, in other words, yes, independently thoughtful, but we still have to follow the rules and regulations, and we have to go through a particular system, an organization that Srila Prabhupada created for maintaining that. So both are there. In other words, an intelligent devotee is able to juxtapose different ideas, and they may be in conflict. And that's part of being independently thoughtful, I think. In other words, to be able to say, well, in this hand, there's this, in this hand, there's this. Now, what would Prabhupada say? Would Prabhupada say, well, you should, even though you're supposed to do something like bow down, you know, down to Vatsmi, see the deity, you know, if there's an epidemic going on, like I think that, didn't Mother Mukhi give that story about the cholera epidemic?
Yes.
Right. The Prabhupada didn't say, "Oh, you'll be protected. You know, Krishna will protect you. Just go and don't worry about the cholera." No, he said, "Don't be stupid," or something to that effect. Yes. "Don't be foolish." You know, if you know, if it's like you have to take normal precautions. You know, it's almost like here. Well, okay. Here's a very famous spiritual example. Remember, was it Rupa Goswami? Who was out in the middle of the sun writing his books, and Radharani comes and puts the umbrella over his head. Do I have this right? And then Sanatana Goswami comes.
Raghunath.
It was Raghunath. But then Sanatana Goswami comes?
Sanatana Goswami.
And chastises him.
Yes.
Why are you making Radharani do this?
Yes.
You're making Radharani serve you, holding an umbrella over your head. Yes. Go get in the shade, you know. Don't be foolish. So it's kind of like that. Okay, even if Krishna might protect you, why are you making Krishna... You know, doing stupid things, making Krishna protect you. You know, in other words, causing disturbance to him. In other words, try to take care of yourself the best you can, you know, and you try to serve Krishna, not make Krishna serve you. Yeah.
I like the way you said it, that independently thoughtful means obey the authority because they see the situation of pandemic. So that's actually more way of seeing that independently thoughtful means how to...
Now, if the GBC told you, okay, from now on, you only have to follow two of the regular principles and chant eight rounds, I would say an independently thoughtful devotee would say, no. No, that's against Prabhupada and the Acharyas and the Bhagavatam. No, I mean, in other words, you know, that's what I'm saying. You have to be a little bit thoughtful, and it's not, you know, at the same time, if something's reasonable and just requires a little cooperation, just... Why not?
Yes.
Anyway.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all. I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.